This will be an emotional episode of Baseball Barbacast. We will cry about the end of the Oakland Coliseum. We will laugh at the Minnesota Twins, and we will sing the praises of Valente Belozo on this episode of Your Favorite Ball Podcast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that believes that the Oakland A's should stay in Oakland. I'm Jake Vincent. That's Jordan Schusterman, and I'm brave enough to say it.
Yeah, it's just us. I was finally convinced. After watching the emotional scenes of yesterday in the waning hours, innings, pitches of the Oakland Coliseum, we are going to start this Friday edition, this final regular season edition, final 2024 regular season edition of Baseball Barbacast, talking about the Oakland A's. I know we hit on it a little bit on Wednesday, but after watching how everything unfolded yesterday, we certainly wanted to start the show with it. There is, of course, plenty of postseason-related topics to get to. The Yankees and Dodgers are division champions. We have a very messy situation on our hands, potentially, with a doubleheader in Atlanta on Monday. We will get to all kinds of stuff. And, of course, it's Friday, so we got the good, the bad, the ugly. However, let's start in Oakland, Jake. This is something that we have covered a decent amount on this show, on various editions of the show over the past few years. We've had some guests on to talk about it. We have tried to capture the situation and explain how we got here. Although I think another main takeaway as everyone was reacting yesterday is just the staggering realization of just like, wait, how and why did we get here? And while this episode is going to focus on the raw emotions of what we saw yesterday, I think that that is still a prevailing thought as we both look backwards and forwards. It is hard not to just think like, what are we doing here? What is going on? But let's zoom in on the scenes of yesterday at the Oakland Coliseum, a sold out Coliseum, of course, for this final game, or so we assume. For the A's playing there after nearly 60 years playing in that
46,889. And I want to start there. The A's fan base over the years has received a lot of flack for empty stadium pictures. And I want to just emphasize how unfair that is. And we saw how unfair that is yesterday with this sold out crowd. If you serve an audience and you serve a fan base, they will show up. If you provide a quality experience, they will show up. It is not as if there are not people who care about baseball living in the East Bay. We saw that yesterday. This place being packed and sold out was so beautiful and was so sad at the same time because I mean, it's just a reminder that baseball can work there and that that fan base, those human beings living in that place deserve a team. They do. And they had the unfortunate reality of happening to live in a place where that team's owner was chasing a shinier object on the horizon. And so just to see that place packed, man, what a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've had, you know, a lot of reactions kind of watching these games, of course, a year ago when we had the reverse boycott where they packed the house and it was we had a similar reaction, a reminder of that those fans exist. I retweeted a video this morning of Brent Rooker talking about what makes the Coliseum special as a baseball venue. And he had, I thought, an insightful answer, which I think is related to some of this. And that's why I wanted to connect it here. Which is that, you know, a lot of the new stadiums, rightfully so, it's not necessarily a good or bad thing, are new and fresh, and there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on around them. There's a lot going on. It's about creating a venue that is more than about just the baseball, right? And that's just the nature of capitalism and just what you would do when you make a fancy new anything is that you want it to involve a lot of different things. And baseball, sure, is, of course, the center of it. but it isn't the only thing. And I think Brent Rooker talking about how when you come to the Coliseum, the people that want to come to the Coliseum, they want to come there just to watch the baseball. Because ultimately, we know that the quality of everything else, and ironically, as people talk about it, this has been a football stadium. You go to the football stadium because you want to watch the baseball. When you don't invest in the baseball, the product that is on the field, which is why people want to go there, that's why they're not going to show up. And that is the reciprocal nature of it. And it's so unfortunate, of course, for the players themselves who have been, especially this team this year, who has absolutely put up an incredible fight and absolutely outperformed maybe what a lot of people expected of them. And we saw that at moments last year, too. But the investment is the investment. And ultimately, when you aren't, when people want to be there to watch the baseball, that is the reason you go to the Coliseum. If you're not giving them baseball, if you're not keeping the good baseball players, if you're trading away the baseball players that they love, if you're not putting together a competitive payroll, competitive team, then that is why the seats are empty. And that is a reminder of that.
One of the images that'll stick with me actually happened the night before the final game, which was groundskeepers pouring dirt from the Coliseum infield into water bottles and handing them to fans. If you want to understand what the place means to people. But yesterday, the festivities began with a national anthem sung by Oakland A's icon and victim of the Moneyball movie, Barry Zito.
It's, yeah, victim is maybe not the perfect descriptor, but we have, you know, made some jokes about that. Did you see the Moneyball memes account quote tweeted the picture of him doing the anthem and it just said, "Who is this?" Anyway, just for the background of that, it's basically, okay, you have the Moneyball story, but then the Moneyball story does not, especially the movie, does not acknowledge some of the like super duper star players that were on the team. And of course, Barry Zito.
Miguel Tejada. Yeah, Barry Zito.
Of course. Not so anyway, movie. But Barry Zito, he sings the anthem. That's very cool. We get the Ricky Henderson, Dave Stewart duo first pitch to Lawrence Butler and Mason Miller. It was very cool. And then the A's, you know, close out a very cool victory. We get Mason Miller coming in the ninth and throwing 104 as he does. And it was obviously cool to see the A's go on top. We get a speech from Mark Kotze after, of course, Mark Kotze, who played multiple years in Oakland. He understands what this venue means, what this team means, what the city means, all these things. I mean, when you talk about lasting images, I don't know if there's anything else from the game in particular that you wanted to hit on, but I think the other thing that kind of stuck with me that was hard for me to wrap my mind around, and again, every time we talk about this, I just can't stress enough how disconnected we are from this place. You went last year, you know, we've been there before, but this is not an area that I can even begin to pretend to understand. So I obviously have leaned on the people that grew up with these people. But something that still even hit me kind of emotionally was kids crying, you know, cutting to kids in the stands crying about this. And of course, these are kids that maybe have grown up going to these A's games as the A's have been good. Maybe, you know, if a kid that's 12 maybe remembers the A's when they were awesome, when they had that Yoenis Cespedes guy, among others, right? Like, they obviously have had some real winning not that long ago that these kids could remember. But it's also that, like, their parents, you know, who in a lot of these situations who have truly grown up and are really losing something. I mean, it's that these kids now have to look at something that they've barely had and yet still means so much to them and know that they're losing it now, let alone the pictures of the people that were there when the stadium first opened and now are seeing it ripped away from them after their entire lives. Like, just thinking about the kids who wanted to be A's fans because their parents were A's fans and now have to have it both explained to them, which I literally don't know how you make sense of this if you're a six-year-old, but that it could mean something to kids now, let alone that they're immensely to their parents as kids. A lot of it was just very difficult to grapple with because, you know, it's hitting a lot of different generations in a very different way. And the other thing that just has to be said is, of course, we think about this exclusively in a baseball context because that's the sport we care about, but it's not irrelevant that this is the third team Oakland has lost, right? Of course, we've seen other teams be taken away in other sports in other cities, but a lot of those cities still have other teams, you know? And so it's just really staggering to even think about what it means to lose a third team in such a short amount of time. And I think that you felt that this being the last one standing is really difficult to kind of wrap your mind around. So I'm sure that added to it, you know, even beyond some of the other teams we've seen, you know, relocate over the years.
I tweeted a thread yesterday that I'm sure people saw with just some of my thoughts on the entire situation. And I'll, you know, regurgitate some of that here now. Caring about stuff is cool. And I think in our society, sometimes people are judged for caring a lot, for letting something mean something to them. That is really the dynamic at the heart of sports fandom. We are convincing ourselves that these 26 strangers to us, wearing familiar laundry, playing in a familiar venue, has meaning, right? And that is, in a lot of ways, not to get too big on it, but like that's the point of waking up every day. And whether that's sports or something else, like attaching meaning to things in our lives beyond friends and family, right? That is what gives being alive color and verve and life. That's what gives life life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that if you want that thing that has meaning to you to be a baseball team, that's great, right? And that is what franchises, what sporting teams want from you. Everything that a team does is to make money and to kind of foster passion from the fan base. That is every tweet, that is every game, that is every in-stadium montage, whatever. And for all these Oakland A's fans who held up their end of the pact, who spent money and time and emotional energy investing into this organization, for them to have the rug pulled out from under them to in such a ruthless, wicked way, that is what hurts the most, because it then makes that caring a one-way street, right? Mm-hmm. And what I think I want to leave A's fans with, as someone who can't begin to understand how they're feeling, is that that's not for naught, right? In giving a part of your time, energy, focus to the Oakland A's, however long you, an A's fan listening, have cared, I mean, don't gaze upon that with regret, right? Mm-hmm. That was time well spent, because it meant something to you, and it will always mean something to you. John Fisher can relocate this team. He cannot relocate your memories. Those are yours, right? And there is something immensely sad that you will be unable to make more of those moving forward, right? However, this was good. This was a good thing, the Oakland A's.
Oh, yeah.
And I am thankful to that fan base for providing such a unique flavor in our sport.
Yeah, and that's what, as we spin this forward, that's what's really challenging now, is there's just still so many unanswered questions about these next few years. And you know, you talk about that connection, and you think about fans, and again, I've mentioned we've had Kyle Madsen, a good friend of the show, radio host in the Sacramento area, and you know, lifelong A's fans. I was texting with him a little bit yesterday. And we've had Mark Carrig on, of course, grew up an A's fan. He really, you know, I encourage to go back and listen to our episodes with those guys to really understand. We did one with Kyle after the reverse boycott last year. But you think about, like, where do you turn your fandom? Like, you're not just taking away your A's fandom, you're taking away your baseball fandom, because it's not that easy to just turn the page and be like, oh, I'll just root for this other team now. No, that will happen, and that's fine. Everyone's going to deal with that, however.
And that's what Rob Manfred said A's fans should do.
Yeah.
He said, just go across the bridge and watch the Giants.
Right. And that's insulting for a million reasons. But, you know, I can at least empathize with, if you push that aside, like, it's not like A's fan, again, these people love baseball. Like, they probably do want to still watch baseball and root for baseball, but maybe not. And that's the cost of it. And that's what's really hard. And maybe at some point down the road, we can have a discussion of just like, what team you would A's fans should want to root for, but I'm not here to tell them how they should do that. I mean, I could try to logic my way through what teams would make sense to support, but it's just going to be a personal thing for a lot of people moving forward. So like I said, there are still so many issues with the fact that they're going to be in Sacramento, the fact that there are A's fans in Sacramento that are going to be told, you know, get excited about Sacramento. Like, that's a weird feeling. Like, there's so many complicated dynamics that are still to come with this situation. And we'll see how that really manifests. But yesterday was a sad day. It was a special day. And obviously, as we've said many times over the last few years, as this day has been, we've been kind of anticipating this ending. We obviously have the A's fans in our thoughts. So anyway, again, if we missed anything obvious or if you had any memories, if you were there, you know, let us know. baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We got a bunch of emails about this when we talked about the you know, Giants A's rivalry earlier this season. We got a lot of good emails about that. So I would love to hear some more perspective from that if people are willing to share. So
all right, yeah, Jordan,
that's the Oakland A's.
Let's take a break. When we get back, we will turn our attention towards cold weather baseball. And welcome back, Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Let's talk about the hurricane. So first things first, Hurricane Helene made landfall yesterday, Thursday, in Florida. Everybody in the areas, please stay safe. Listen to local authorities. Do not be a hero. We are not weathermen. Actually, Jordan is. No. Jordan's a weatherman. I'm not.
This is, I mean, obviously, any situation like this, the health and safety of the human beings, millions of human beings on the Gulf Coast of Florida is first and foremost. My understanding as we record this, you know, on Friday morning is that, you know, the storm has essentially made its way into Georgia. And this is where it has changed some plans involving Major League Baseball, which, as we know, is not the priority here and not the most important thing. But this is a baseball podcast. And so we're going to do our best to address how this is impacting these next final few days of the regular season.
So what has happened? The Mets and Braves entered a deciding three-game series with the Mets two games up. The Braves won game one of that series, trimming the lead to one game. Then the storm came. Games were canceled on Wednesday and on Thursday. Those games have been moved to Monday as a double header. Okay. The final day of the regular season scheduled is Sunday. The wild card round is scheduled to start on Tuesday. And therefore, the prospect of the Mets and Braves playing a season deciding double header on Monday in Atlanta is a logistical nightmare.
Yes.
The Mets this weekend have a three-game set in Milwaukee against the Brewers, while the Braves are home against the Kansas City Royals.
Yes. Before we get to, before I flip it over to you to kind of explain the scenarios in front of us, I just wanted to say a couple things about the anger directed at MLB towards this, which I understand that the inclination for, as in all cases, is MLB is bungling this. This is ridiculous. And I get that. In terms of what they could have done differently this past week, my understanding is, again, this hurricane has been on the radar for a while. They were both off on Monday. Maybe they could have played Monday, moved it up, played Monday, doubleheader Tuesday, something like that. None of that is easy either. That's, I guess, what they could have done. In the instant, I was like, what were they really supposed to do differently? The bigger picture thing, do you have any thoughts about that? Because I just don't, I know, I understand people are mad, but I don't. Do you have any thoughts about what they were supposed to do differently once they got to this point?
Because so the one thing that they could have done, the one thing they could have done is move it, right? Now,
or just
the reason
move, actually move the games, like physically.
Play the games in Texas in a dome, right? Sure. That is one thing that they could have done. Yeah. Now, there are a lot of complications that go along with that because the Braves are expecting 40,000 people at these games and they want the money that goes along with that.
Right.
There's a scenario where if I'm MLB, I say to the Braves, look, I'm sorry, we have to do this. Estimate what you think you would have made, and we'll just write you a freaking check for like the gate for those games. and sure. concessions and whatever, right? Like that, yeah. in my mind, is, I think, the best way to do it. The Rays and Yankees played a game at Citi Field mm-hmm. in 2018, I believe, 2017 maybe. That was when the thumbs down guy thing happened, which is hilarious. Game that was supposed to be in Tampa got moved. They could have done that again. It's difficult. And I think that the real problem here, and I presume this is what you were going to say, the real problem is that there's one day between the end of the regular season and the start of the playoffs. That is the issue here, okay? That it is so truncated and squeezed into such a small window because MLB expanded the postseason. Now, I think that the expanded postseason generally has been good, and I like it, and it's been entertaining. But when you're trying to cram it all before the weather gets cold at the beginning of November, you're left with this type of situation, right? To me, that is the real issue here. Whereas if the wild card started on Wednesday instead of Tuesday, even one day, I think that makes this a really different situation.
Yeah. And I think, yeah. And just back, since you brought it up, that Rays, Yankees situation was in earlier September, and it was 2017. So it wasn't as quite of a crunch, but they were able to do that. But to your point, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think that while part of the expanded, especially the last few years, part of the expansion was to eliminate games 163 so that you wouldn't have to worry about stuff on that Monday after Sunday, weather was always going to be something that could show up. And then we've ended up in just like the worst case scenario for a million reasons because of the teams involved and the timing and all these things, right? But that was something that was extremely realistic regardless of the hurricane radar. Like that was always something that was going to happen at some point. And as soon as they announced this new format, you know, a couple years ago, I was like, this will happen at some point and it will going to be a mess. And now we have arrived at a version of that.
So now what? All right. Let's introduce the Arizona Diamondbacks into the story. Where do things stand right now? The Mets and the Diamondbacks are technically tied. The Diamondbacks have one more win and one more loss because they have played two more games. Okay. One game behind both of those teams are the Atlanta Braves. Now, both the Mets and the Braves have a tiebreaker over the Arizona Diamondbacks. That is very relevant. If the Mets and Braves are both at least one game up over the Diamondbacks at the end of play on Sunday, Monday's games will not be played. Even though both teams have the tiebreaker, they would need to play those games on Monday because if a team tied with the Diamondbacks loses both of those games on Monday, they would then drop below Arizona and the tiebreaker would become irrelevant. Jordan Schusterman, does that make sense to you?
I'm following.
Great. That is an unlikely scenario. What will likely happen, okay? Yeah. What will likely happen is that those games on Monday, at least one of them will need to be played. That is almost certainly going to happen. That is immensely unfair, particularly for the New York Mets. Here is why. The Mets are currently in Milwaukee for a three-game set. They will play a game at 3 o'clock on Sunday. Every team, I guess 2 o'clock local. Every team's game starts at 3 Eastern on Sunday, the final day of the season. They will finish that game around 6. They will board a plane around 7:15. They will fly to Atlanta. They will get there around, I don't know how long that flight is, like 11 local time, maybe? They'll be in their beds by around 12:30, okay? They will wake up around 8, get to the yard around 9:30. They will play a game at 1 o'clock. They will likely play another game around 3.
Probably noon. Starting that as soon as possible. Yeah.
Okay, so push everything else up an hour. They're going to start at noon, right? They'll probably play another game starting around 3:30. They'll probably finish that around 6:30, 7 o'clock. Then, if they make the playoffs, they will either need to fly back to Milwaukee, where they just were, or God forbid, to San Diego, all the way across the freaking country. They will then land in San Diego late on Monday night. They will crawl to bed. They will sleep. And then they will begin their playoff journey on Tuesday morning. And all of that kerfuffle doesn't even include the pitching. And I think this is the key. And this is true for both teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is Atlanta is really in the spot where, and they're starting free tonight. And then, yeah, but it's sure. All of them, of course.
I was just saying that the travel mess is the Mets alone. Atlanta, if they do make the playoffs and they need to fly to San Diego or Milwaukee on Monday night, that stinks. But the Mets having to bop around is just a little worse. But you're right.
Atlanta's already home this weekend. Right?
Atlanta's already home. They're sleeping in their beds, whatever. Both teams need to cover 18 innings on Monday. On Monday. And then need to roll into the next day. It is an enormous competitive disadvantage for both of these teams if they are to get into the playoffs. Like, overwhelmingly so. And for the entirety of the MLB season to come down to this, that is what sucks so, so hard.
Sure.
Here is the one edit I would make if I was Big Bob Manfred. Ready? I would let the Mets and or the Braves start their wild card round on Wednesday. Every single wild card series but one over the last 2 years has finished in two games. The only one that has gone three was Mets Padres. Okay? So the odds are there's like a 50% chance that the wild card series for the Mets or the Braves ends in two games. And so the third day of games would just be an off day in that event. Does that make sense? Do you see what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, but why would the Brewers and Padres be like, yeah, sure.
Because of fairness? Is that naive?
Why do they care? I mean, yeah, sure. I guess you're right, but like, if I'm the Brewers or Padres, I'm like, what? Why are we pushing any of this for that? That doesn't make any sense. We're the higher seeds anyway. Brewers are like, we won the division. This isn't my problem. So I agree with you, but I just think this is a mess. That's what it is. And that's what I don't think there are easy solutions. And you can say that that's the league's fault. You can say that it's not fun to talk about. It's not easy.
Yeah. The ideal situation is that they don't need to play Monday. And the way that they don't need to play Monday is what I just described, right? Either it's Atlanta just stinking this weekend, it's Arizona stinking this weekend, or it's I just hope one of these three teams has a horrible weekend and the other two sweep. That is the best scenario for us, I think.
Yeah.
The chaos on Monday will be hilarious and unforgettable, and like we will suck up every minute of it, but I find it to be an unsavory way for the season to end.
That I totally agree with, and especially because there's scenarios where like the second game means way less to the Mets than the Braves, and like that introduces a whole other complicated in terms of motivation, and then okay, now you're screwing Arizona. Like there's so whatever. All these things are unpleasant. These are all first world baseball problems, okay? I know what you just described in terms of fairness, and the Mets have to jet set all these places. That's all true, right? But the other thing is, and maybe this is like a grumpy take, and I agree that like it'd be great to have the pitching all lined up and all these things. It's just like a lot of these teams were just playing 17 days in a row. Like that's just baseball. That's just kind of what it is. I understand that there's a lot of travel, that this travel would be particularly ridiculous. 100%. I'm with you. But I don't think that like these players are just going to be like, yep, this is what we're doing. We'd rather be in the playoffs than not be in the playoffs. And so that's the other part of this, is that one of these three teams is just not going to be in the postseason on Tuesday. And no matter how it goes down, it ain't going to be pretty. And it's not going to feel good. And the fact that it could end up being Arizona is also kind of goofy when you consider their situation. Now, they are playing the Padres this weekend at home. The Padres now don't really have anything to play for. So maybe that, helps Arizona. But it is kind of an interesting sequence to consider. So that is that. Anything else on Mets Braves?
No. And the reason we spend so much time on that is because so much of the rest of the postseason picture is all but done and dusted, because last night the Minnesota Twins just absolutely
okay. So you want all right? We'll start with the AL wild card. we'll do that. So, we'll circle back to Yankees Dodgers. So let's let's start with the Twins.
So can I just tell you how I took this in?
Please.
So I was at Yankees last night. Yankees win the division. Woohoo. I had to write after the game. And so was not watching the Twins game. Yet I received maybe 7 texts about the game. People knowing that I am someone who hates bad bunting. And so I got like an overflow of messages. I watched the highlights this morning. And the Minnesota Twins, with just an all-time brutal loss to cap an all-time brutal stretch, they are now, what, 3 games out?
Yeah, so basically their only way to make it in is to sweep the Orioles and for the Tigers and Royals to both get swept this weekend by the White Sox and, I guess, the Braves.
The Braves.
So that's why they are at 0.00001% chances to make the postseason. And it was still not looking good, even if they had won that game, because the Royals and Tigers both won on Thursday. But for all intents and purposes, it's over. And it was because of this loss. And they had a very similar extra inning game in Boston last week that they won miraculously. But this one, they found a way to lose against the most anonymous group of Marlins pitchers imaginable.
Even read it out. For
sickos like us. The Marlins, again, this was in 13 innings, okay? The Marlins, I would love for people to know, again, people who listen to this show, they know ball, right? But these 8 pitchers combined to beat the Minnesota Twins. Valente Belozo, Lake Backer, Anthony Veneziano, Anthony Bender, Jesus Tinoco, Michael Peterson, Anthony Maldonado, yes, that's 3 Anthonys, and Darren McCacken. 13 innings for the Miami Marlins, and the Twins were unable, go 2-for-19 with runners in scoring position, and have a bunt catastrophe of a lifetime from Ryan Jeffers, a bunt pop-up double play in extras that really sunk their hopes of scoring the runs that they needed. They lose 8-6 in 13. That's probably going to do it for the Minnesota Twins in 2024. A steep, steep, steep decline.
Can I say some numbers?
Please. Yeah, we got some more numbers here. Yep.
September 2nd, 95.8% playoff odds for Fangraphs. Yeah. If you want to go a little bit later, September 12th, 90.8. We'll go a little bit later. September 20th, my friends, that is 7 days ago. They had 79.3% playoff odds. 7 days ago. Today, that number is basically 0. An all-time capitulation from the Minnesota Twins, who have just played horrible baseball for an extended stretch. I mean, we got a that can't happen in the wild on the Twins broadcast after that double play pop-up.
Yes, which I guess I'm not sure we've mentioned this, but this is just, I mean, there's just some moments, some mistakes that happen during a baseball game that cannot, that should not, that
they cannot
happen in these spots. And that is exactly what Twins broadcaster Corey Provis said.
It did happen.
Jeffers pumped that up. It did happen, unfortunately, for Minnesota. And I mean, bigger picture, how does this happen? They have 3 rookies in their starting rotation for the last really 2-3 months of the year. They were doing their best, but they just couldn't cover very many innings. And they tired out a bullpen that was talented, but not that good. And when Carlos Correa and Byron Buxton missed 2 months, and Royce Lewis, who you thought was your 3rd superstar, has been playing really terribly for the last 3 months. I hate to say it. We all love Royce Lewis, but he has been very bad for much of the second half. They just don't have enough good players. And that is what sunk this team. And as we kind of, and I mean, I want to lump in Seattle here for a reason, because I think bigger picture for these franchises, there's some similar feelings, but go ahead.
The Twins had the worst trade deadline ever. Their only move at the deadline was trading for Trevor Richards, who they, I believe, DFA'd pretty quickly thereafter.
Yeah, he's been triple. Option. Yep.
So obvious they needed another starter, right? Like, that is a team that needed Eric Fetty.
It's funny, the reporting is that they were hard after Nestor, which I know Nestor's now hurt, but that was something that they were apparently maybe close to doing. But anyway, the point is, when you think about the frustration, this is a team that comfortably won this division last year, and you felt great about that. I mean, I think I also picked them, but I wasn't as optimistic. But they ended up in this juggernaut division, and these 3 other teams, that are a lot, you know, younger and kind of trending in a more positive direction, just kind of all passed them at once, right? They just absolutely embarrassed them. And when you think about how we felt about this Twins team at the end of last season, all right, we finally broke this postseason drought. You know, they had all this messaging that was like, wow, what a season. It's only up from here. I mean, you mentioned the deadline. They barely did anything in the offseason. And so now you just have this, the bones of a team, the roster that is not bad, but with limited ownership investment and limited aggressive action from a front office, you're left with the feeling of, we are not going to take this next step forward. And that is really frustrating. And that's why I bring up Seattle, because there's a lot of similar feelings with that fan base as they were eliminated yesterday.
And part of the reason they were eliminated, both those teams, is because the Royals and Tigers both swept.
Yep.
The Royals one was less interesting because of the Nats. I believe they went, okay, so the Nats scored on Saturday and then did not score again at all until Thursday.
Yeah. They,
which
they
again,
went like 33 innings
without scoring.
And this is against a Royals offense that has been the worst offense in baseball for the last, you know, month.
So Royals sweep the Nats. Yeah. Nats are butt. Great. The Tigers games were electrifying. The win on Thursday, scoring two runs in the bottom of the eighth against Tampa Bay. Sack fly from Justin Henry Molloy, scores Matt Vierling, slides into home, hops up, roars to the crowd, pumps his fist. Comerica is
Benetti.
Bopping.
Benetti, and it's Benetti season, baby. Oh my gosh.
Tigers broadcaster Jason Benetti, in his first year after coming over from the White Sox, what a freaking business decision from Jason. Ripping off one of the lines of the year, Jordan. What was it? A city that doesn't care about the odds has a baseball team to match.
Oh,
what?
I mean,
it's great theater.
It's,
and then
just
quickly on Benetti.
Yeah.
So Jason Benetti, friend of the show, does college football for Fox on the weekends. Geez. I believe that Jason Benetti was supposed to call the UCF Colorado game this weekend. Supposed to.
Makes sense.
Because
right?
I think he's staying. I said, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving Detroit. I'm pretty sure he's staying in town to call this weekend's Tigers games.
Wow.
Because there's a clinching.
So their magic number is now one after the Twins loss. So they can win tonight and they're playing the White Sox. let's introduce the White Sox as a character in here just because. The White Sox swept the Angels. The White Sox pushed Garrett Crochet back to Friday tonight against Detroit. Greedy Sizemore were basically being like, yeah, like we're just trying to make things more interesting. Like
manager of the year.
We love that for Greedy Sizemore. So it will be Crochet tonight against the Tigers. Now, I'm not expecting him to throw 150 pitches, but still, it's still Garrett Crochet. This is not an easy assignment, but obviously the Tigers have been scoring a lot of runs late. We'll see if this White Sox bullpen, after this massive sweep, their first sweep since April, if they can keep the momentum going. The White Sox still have not lost their 121st game. They managed to avoid making that history at home. Will they sweep the Tigers? Probably not. So this worst record in MLB history is probably still on deck. But congratulations to the White Sox for finishing strong their home slate. Happy for them. And then, yeah, I mean, again, the Tigers are going to clinch. The Royals are going to clinch. The last thing about the Royals I wanted to mention is that Vinny Pasquantino taking batting practice. This dude broke his thumb less than a month ago. And that's usually an injury that you don't come back from in a month. But I don't know how close he actually is coming back, but he said he didn't believe his season was over when it happened. And that is a promising development because, as I said, this offense has been horrific since he went down. And while it seems likely they will be in the postseason and they do have great pitching that might be enough to win them some games in October, they're going to be able to need to score some runs. And even an 80% Vinny Pasquantino would probably help them do that.
Very quickly on the two most popular teams in baseball clinching their divisions last night. At minute 40 of the podcast, the Dodgers, after dropping that first game ending on the triple play, beat the Padres the last two evenings to win their 11th NL West title in the last 12 years. There was a quote from Dave Roberts that I thought was very interesting. We got a great email about this, Jordan. I don't know if you read it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Dave Roberts quote was something along the lines of, sorry, I'm just pulling it up right now. Dave Roberts, this is from @BlakeWilliams. He says, Dave Roberts said he's surprised by the panic outside the clubhouse over the Dodgers, despite them having the best record in baseball. He said the clubhouse hasn't been worried. Quote, we've still had a pretty good season. Totally fine with me. Urgency is a very complicated thing internally. If every manager was to kind of latch onto fan sentiment and kind of amplify that energy back into the clubhouse, all those managers would get fired immediately. The job of the manager is to make sure people don't panic. The job of a fan is to panic.
Yep.
Right? Like that.
Yep.
And so I have no issue with him saying this. Now, granted, I'm worried about the Dodgers because they don't have any starting pitching, but like, what's Dave Roberts going to say? Right? Yeah. I mean, we're screwed. No, he's going to maintain a rational positivity.
Yeah, and I totally, again, this email we got from Dylan, a Dodgers fan who's really frustrated that they haven't been able to make more of these opportunities over the last decade, and that's totally valid. Again, but to Jake's point, like, you have a different job and a priority than Dave Roberts, and I also like what Andrew Friedman said in the champagne celebration last night, where everyone's like, all right, Andrew, like, how are you going to handle these expectations are so great? How are you? He's like, high expectations is a lot better than the alternative, which is being bad or irrelevant or not trying to win. And so while they might be heading for another devastating postseason exit, as most of these teams are, that's how this works.
You could be the Rockies.
Yeah, again, like, here they are again with another division title, with another champagne celebration, with Shohei Ohtani, with like the best record in baseball, despite all these issues, which, yes, we will talk about. And yes, we will say we don't believe in them because how are they going to get outs? That's fine. The Dodgers still might win the World Series. And you can say that about pretty much all these teams because that's how the playoffs work. And we will keep repeating that over and over in the coming weeks. And if they lose, that doesn't mean they're you know, completely absolved of criticism for the team building and some of the things that they were counting on. That's all fine. And I understand if you're a fan, you say, Dave Roberts, how can he's the common denominator with these teams that keep falling short. I get that. That's fine. But as far as your point in response to Dave Roberts acting calm and confident, you're 100% correct. What do you want these guys to say? I just, the urgency, when we say urgency, all these guys are saying the same thing in every clubhouse. Okay. And so whether that's a good or a bad thing, I understand that frustration from a fan, but that's just kind of part of the gig. And so that's kind of how I feel about that. Now, all that said, last thing on the Dodgers, I mean, holy crap, right? Shohei Ohtani has like one of the greatest games we've ever seen since then. He has a hit and a run in every single game. He had the game-winning hits on Wednesday and Thursday. He is 10 for his last 11 with runners in scoring position. He has more hits with runners in scoring position than I think 8 teams over the last week. He's at 400 total bases, which we have not seen since 2001. So that Ohtani fella seemed to be enjoying his first champagne celebration. Remember, when they clinched a postseason berth, they didn't pop bottles. And so this was really the first time we got to see Ohtani really party it up. And it was as cool as you would expect. So that is the Dodgers. They are amazing. And they are still trying to clinch this one seed, which is, I guess, still on the table as they are, I think, game and a half up on the Phillies.
So I was at Yankees last night. If you want to read my thoughts on Gerrit Cole, that is up at Yahoo Sports. Cole, who became the punchline of baseball after throwing up four fingers and intentionally walking Rafael Devers. I believe he's allowed just one run in like 16 innings since doing that. He was dominant last night against the Orioles, pitching into the seventh inning. The night really belonged to him. Yankees beat the brakes off of Baltimore. Aaron Judge hit one of the higher home runs I've ever seen him hit at Yankee Stadium. Felt like it caromed off the moon. And then the Yankees partied, which always leads to some interesting sights and sounds.
Yeah, 58 home runs for Aaron Judge, 5 straight games with a homer.
Oh, quickly, this was a moment I will never forget, okay? We're in the, we do the postgame celebration, we go back to the press conference room, and Aaron Boone is in there, and somebody asks, you know, Aaron Judge, he's been so good, homers in 5 straight games, and Boone just goes, I didn't even realize that, right? To be the manager of the New York Yankees and to just not realize that your best player is homer in 5 straight games is so wild.
But it's a good reminder that Aaron Judge is the least of Aaron Boone's concerns.
He doesn't think about him. He's just like, yeah, he goes up there and bangs.
And I think, again, you can apply a lot of the same sentiments to the Dodgers in the sense that should this team be held to the highest of standards? should we criticize them when they fail to reach the World Series again? All these things are true. But after last year's disaster, they went out and got Juan Soto. They made a bunch of signs. Like, they were like, no, not happening again. And they won the AL East, which is not a small thing. And so, like we said, it doesn't mean they are absolved of criticism for some of their decisions and some of their roster building and some of that's all fine. But you got to give them credit. This team, which has assembled a lot of incredible, some of the best players in the world, best pitchers in the world, they did it. And there were times this year where we weren't sure they did. And once again, they were like, no, we're still the Yankees. And I think you got it. You got to tip your cap at some point for that.
All right, let's take a break. When we return, the good, the bad, and the ugly will enter your ears. Welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. It's that time of the week. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing, Dan, ugly. Mr. Schusterman, please start us off.
My good is that we have backyard baseball news. We had a whole episode about the return of our beloved game from our childhood, and now we have an official release date. At least the first version, as Backyard Baseball 1997, will be available on Steam for PC only. Sorry, Jake. on October 10th. But we will find you a PC to play this game on. And I just want to say the reason why this is good, it's not just that this game's coming back because we already knew that. I just want to say that the communication and the rollout of bringing this game back has been beautiful and flawless. And I am just so happy with how they have handled this. I think it is so cool. And I think that the balance of both being cryptic, but also giving fans more and more as this project continues has been beautifully handled, and I am really appreciative of that. So October 10th, I know that's, I think, ALDS game four, but I'll be hitting some dingers with Jocinda Smith, at least during those games.
Pretty great. I'm going to, for my good, talk about Colton Cowser. Colton Cowser, Orioles outfielder, who might win Rookie of the Year. AL Rookie of the Year, yeah. We have not talked about enough.
Totally. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Cowser, I would say it could be Luis Gil or it could be Austin Wells. I don't have a vote for this one, to be clear. Thank God, because I don't know how I would decide it. After the Orioles clinch on Monday, did you see Colton Cowser's interview with Kevin Brown?
Yeah, he was. Oh, I did. Oh, you're talking about specifically what he talked about. Because, yeah, Cowser was, I mean, he was having a good time. But, yeah, what he brought up was really something.
He was having a good time. Now, he said to me yesterday, he was like, I don't know why everyone thought I was intoxicated. Like, he was like, I was just having a good time. And
yeah,
you know what?
Colton Knowing Cowser. Colton. Yeah. Yeah.
That's Colton Cowser.
Totally, 100%.
So Kevin Brown asks, did I hear that you went to go see Great Gatsby yesterday on the off day, the musical? And Colton's like, yes, the third understudy was great, who played Daisy. She did a lovely job. Hilarious specificity from Colton Cowser. Jordan, did you know that Daisy responded to Colton Cowser?
I did see this.
This is so good.
What a shout.
Kayla Peccioni, the understudy of Great Gatsby, put on her Instagram. This is via Danielle Allen Tuck of Baltimore Banner. I told y'all, understudy slay. Hi, Orioles. Glad you enjoy me. Monday's Daisy understudy at Colton Cowser at Gunnar Henderson. Great. We love a Broadway baseball crossover.
Do we think Gunnar was at the show too?
I do not. No.
Okay. I know he was in that interview, but I would love
to
know
another Oriole
crew. Yeah.
Another Oriole went to the show, but I don't think Gunnar went to the show. I could be wrong. Maybe he loves the musical, but
yeah. All right. My bad this week for one final time is Patrick.
Clap it up. Did you watch all of this? I watched this whole start.
I watched a good amount of this start. Now, Patrick Corbin on Thursday was not that bad. Pitched into the sixth, 4 runs allowed, no decision. Walked off the Nationals Park mound to a standing ovation from the Nationals fans who understand that flags fly forever. A fan held up a sign that said, "Thank you, Patrick." He put a ring on it. And that's true. Because when they gave him 6 years and $140 million before the 2019 season, and he was fantastic in the 2019 season, including the postseason, that's the point. That's why you spend in free agency. because those talented players that you're giving hundreds of million dollars can help you win a World Series. And Patrick Corbin did that. And for reasons that I am hoping someone will write about more thoroughly at some point in the next 5 years when Patrick Corbin's career is in the rearview. After that, he just immediately became the worst pitcher in baseball. And yet, he didn't miss a start. This guy posted, no pitcher on the planet has made more major league starts than Patrick Corbin since 2017. Him and Aaron Nola are like 10 ahead of everybody else. And for, again, whatever, he has just been so bad every year since that year. He is on pace to lead the league in losses for a fourth consecutive season, which I don't believe has ever happened. Again, like win losses, whatever. Oh, that's it. But if you're doing it for four straight years, that tells you something. But the reality is, it's what I started with. He gave them what they wanted. And while he ended up, you know, compiling this bizarre workload of bad production, he always showed up. And he was one thing that Davey Martinez did not have to think about, because whether he liked it or not, Patrick Corbin was going to take the ball every 5 days.
Davey Martinez didn't have to think about it because he knew he was probably going to lose that day.
Yeah, but it is one of the stranger careers I've ever seen. And I think the last thing to say about this is this the end for Patrick Corbin? Probably. But that's the other fascinating thing about this is there was no reason anyone was ever going to trade for him at any point because of how much money he was making over the last few years. But he's 35. We know he's healthy. And maybe there is another chapter here. I doubt it, but I'm so interested to see if somebody invites him, or if he just takes his money and goes retires. That's very plausible too. But I am really curious, because he did not say this is the end of my career, right? So I'm super curious if there is one more chapter for Patrick Corbin in a relief role. What do you think?
Bingo. I would give Patrick Corbin $1 million to be in my bullpen. If I was,
I am so curious. He honestly is like top 10 free agent I'm most intrigued by this postseason.
That's
this
awesome. Winner.
So anyway, but let's be real. He's been bad. What you got for bet?
Ron Washington made some news this week. Manager of the Angels of Anaheim in an interview with the LA Times. I'm going to read Ron Washington's quote, "We're going to get some baseball players who may not be superstars, but they know how to play. We forgot to bring real baseball players into the organization. Nothing against those guys here, but they're not big league baseball players, and they certainly can't help us win a championship." Washington later said that he misspoke. I'm going to be real. You didn't, Wash. That was harsh, and you probably shouldn't have said that, but you're not wrong. Okay, you're not wrong. The reason this is bad is not just that Washington said this publicly. Like, we all understand this. If you're the manager of the team, maybe it's refreshing to hear this level of honesty, but it's probably bad, right? But that the whole Angel situation is the problem, right? It's not just Wash. Like, it's easy to blame him for saying this, but it's bigger than that. But to have something like this come out is just so wild and so bad. Like, yeah, these guys stink, man. All right, let's run it back.
Not
next
good
year,
enough.
Same
group. Yeah, but that is the story, right? And when you have the two teams with the longest postseason droughts, the Tigers and the Angels, one team on the verge of clinching a postseason spot, the other getting swept by possibly the worst team in baseball history, it's bad. It's really, tough. Really, tough. Really, really bad. It's really bad. And I just don't know what you do from here, and I don't know where Wash. I assume he'll be back next season because there's only 30 managerial jobs, and I'm sure he loves managing as bad as they've been, but boy oh boy do they have a lot of work to do. So that is definitely bad. I am excited about my Ugla. Do you want to do Ugla first? If you have
yeah.
one. Okay, go ahead.
Someone proposed at a White Sox game.
I did
this
not
is from
this.
At Ali White Sox, A-L-I White Sox. Hmm. She tweets, "Imagine getting proposed to on the night the White Sox can make history for the worst MLB record of all time." There
but
is a
they
screenshot.
Did it.
They didn't. There's a picture of the big board. It says, "Veronica, will you marry me?" Look, I said earlier on the show, I want people to care. Find your joy wherever you find it. Just maybe not at the White Sox game.
Yeah, I don't know. I think...
How good does a team need to be for you to propose at it at a game they're playing? Like over 500 for me.
I imagine that this was a little bit cheaper than proposing at like Wrigley. But maybe not. I don't know. I mean, we've had a lot of ballpark proposal discourse over the years, but this is a special kind of UGLA, so I agree with that. All right. My UGLA is Minnesota Twins related, tangentially. Willie Castro. A lot went wrong for the Twins this year, but Willie Castro was pretty freaking cool. Willie Castro made Major League history recently as the first player ever to appear at five different positions in at least 25 games.
Wow.
25 games at short, second, third, left, center. Willie Castro, a super utility superhero. And I have been fascinated by these types of players for a long time. And so I started stat heading, bouncing around, seeing what are the other greatest utility seasons ever. Sorting, combining different positions. Oh, who's played all the infield positions? Mark Loretta played all four infield spots for 20 games in 2000. We got some Andrew Romine seasons in there. Denny Hocking in 2000 had some wild ones also for the Twins. So Taguchi, here's a fun one. The only player to play 50 games at all three outfield spots in one season was 2005 So Taguchi. But then I really started getting goofy with it. And I was like, okay, sure, cool, Willie Castro. But what does Willie Castro not do? He doesn't catch. We haven't seen Willie Castro catch. So then I thought, okay.
It's not Willie Castro.
It's not. So I was like, okay, I wonder, and we've had a few of these like guys who can catch and then play other positions, right? Dalton Varsho is one that stands out. A catcher center fielder. That's incredible. That's an amazing thing. But then I was like, hold on. What if someone has played catcher, center field, and shortstop in the same season? And that led me to a very, very short list of names. The first of which was Tony Suk. Tony Suk for the 1884 Chicago something baseball team played center field and shortstop and catcher. And his name was Tony Suk. So that is great because Tony
Suk. Hey, Mom, I'm going to be late for dinner. I'm going to be late for dinner. I'm going to the Sucks.
Tony Suk. I guess probably Anthony Suk.
His parents. Suk. His parents, Mr. and Mrs. Suk.
Charles. Sucks. Charles Anthony Suk. He could have been Chuck Suk.
Chaz Suk.
Chucky Suk. But no, Tony Suk is also really funny. So anyway, Tony Suk playing for the 1884 Chicago. What is this team? The Chicago Pittsburgh. It's just Chicago / Pittsburgh is the team.
I mean, sure. You know, so, when Joe Maddon made those t-shirts, try not to suck, that's what he meant. Try not
Chicago,
to Tony
Pittsburgh
suck.
Finished sixth in the 1884 Union Association. Who anyway, Tony Suk was not the conclusion of this UGLA. The conclusion of this UGLA was a gentleman named Daryl Thomas. Are you familiar with Daryl Thomas, Jake?
I am not familiar Daryl with Daryl Thomas, Jordan.
All right. So Tony Suk, 1884. There were a couple other guys that did it like 100 years ago. And then nobody else played catcher and shortstop and center field multiple times in a season until 1980, when Daryl Thomas, L.A. born and raised utility man for the 1980 Dodgers, caught three games early in the season for the L.A. Dodgers, despite having never caught in the minors. Not only, and the reason he had to catch because Steve Yeager was hurt and so was Mike Socha. And they needed a catcher desperately. This was an emergency catcher situation. And John Wiseman has an incredible story about this. This is a blog from 2015 on the Dodgers blog. Not only did they have Daryl Thomas catch, his first game that he caught was Charlie Huff. So for three games in April, this dude had to catch a knuckleballer. And he was like this skinny guy. He did not look like a catcher whatsoever, but he was the only one willing to do it. And Daryl Thomas caught three games. He even threw someone out. They did have a game where they like stole 10 bases on him, but you know, that's going to happen. But Daryl Thomas is the only player. And then he goes on, he plays, he's playing shortstop, he's playing center. He wins the World Series with the Dodgers in 1981. But there's just some incredible quotes just about Daryl Thomas filling in as an emergency catcher. Because we joke about emergency catchers all the time now, but you don't actually ever see it. If you do, maybe it's for an inning. But Daryl Thomas is the only guy, and there's all kinds of other stuff in the story that are amazing. But this was an incredible rabbit hole to go down. So thank you to Willie Castro. Thank you to Tony Suck. And so to Gucci and Mark Loretta and Andrew Romine and all the great super utility men over the years. But Daryl Thomas was a baseball story that I very much enjoyed finding. So I would encourage people to go read more about his career. There you go.
You and George Schusterman are not the same. What a performance. Well done. Thank you all for listening to this episode, Tony Sucky episode of Baseball Barbercast. Enjoy this weekend's baseball. Mm-hmm. It will be good.
Yes. One final thing. One thing we've dropped the ball on is the Baseball Barbercast Fantasy Baseball League. But I wanted to bring it up again because we got an email from Colin saying, hey, what's going on with that league? Well, here's all you need to know about that league. Jake finished last. So that's the first thing you need to know.
Well, that's because I haven't logged on to it since April.
I know.
Which I also said would happen, dude.
I know.
I know.
More importantly, the championship is coming down to the wire. It is between our comedian friend, Gabby Brown.
Yes.
And three men and a baby.
Oh!
Max, Greg, and Jaron, who drafted with the baby on their lap during our live draft back before the season. It is the baby against Gabby. And it might come down to these last few games in Atlanta, by the way. So good luck to Gabby. Good luck to three men and a baby to see who can raise this championship crown. And we will revisit it next season and see if we want to be either a little bit more, organized to pay attention to this season over the course of the year. But anyway, that's your update.
Thank you.
Also,
I needed that update considering I was in the league. Sorry, guys.
This was not making you feel bad again.
I know.
It's very funny the range of people that logged off immediately and the other ones that made like 500 moves. And I still finished fifth and I barely made any moves either. But anyway, that's it. Thank you all for listening. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz for producing. We will be back likely on Sunday night, but you'll hear from us again soon. Obviously, everything that happens on Monday is going to complicate things, but we appreciate you listening all regular season long. Plenty more Baseball Barbercast to come. So thank you for listening. Talk to you all very soon.